problems that I had planted.
So why are we here? We have that one too, right?
You only do three.
Just three? Okay, I'm Nick. I'm an addict, and I am new at this, so I apologize. I know, right? So I got like 1 year clean. I'm going to run through this in 30 seconds. If it wasn't for this program, I wouldn't be here, and I wouldn't be alive today, and I'm very blessed to get out of myself and be able to come up here and do this in front of y'all. And Mo asked me to do a chair one if I would, and God's will versus self-will is something that I struggle with every day, so I thought that would be a great one to sit in on. So I've got a friend, Marta. Would you like to introduce the first speaker?
Yes.
Good job.
Hi, Marta. I'm an addict.
Hey, Marta.
And this is really an honor for me because anytime you get to introduce a friend, it's an amazing experience. But I get the honor of introducing just a beautiful human being who is the sort of person that just draws people to her like a magnet without even trying. And she came to our area with some recovery under her belt, and it's very obvious anytime you talk to her, but she just fit in immediately. You know, it was like she'd always been here. And I had this feeling from the first time I met her that we knew each other, even though it was impossible. So I just went up to her after the meeting and was like, I feel like I know you, and so we have to be friends. And she was like, Roger that. And you know, we've just been going hard in the paint on our recovery together ever since. And she is such an inspiration to me, such a great example to me of how to live this program in your daily life and in all of your affairs. And so without further ado, I bring you Andy.
Hi, family. I'm an addict. My name's Andy.
Hi, Andy.
A lot of people in this room, that's so amazing. Room full of miracles. I notice my mouth is dry and my hands are sweaty, so I'm going to need my secret weapon here, chapstick. Okay, much better. I want to start by thanking the committee for inviting me to share today. It's truly an honor to share my experience, strength, and hope with other addicts that also show me the way. And I want to give a special welcome to any newcomers who might be in the room, or for anyone that this might be their first convention. We're so glad you're here. Welcome home. The topic I was asked to speak on today is about self-will versus God's will. And for me, that 100% starts with getting honest about how I actually show up in the world. Okay. When I'm scared, I try to control everything. Myself, circumstances, and every single person around me. I didn't know it then when I came into recovery, but every time I try and grab tighter and hold on to things and control them more, what I really need is guidance, not more force, right? And that's where the Serenity Prayer makes a lot of sense to me, and as I continue to work my steps, it makes more and more sense to me. I'm asking my higher power for acceptance where I can't change things, courage where I can, and for me, the most important part of that is the wisdom to know the difference, right? Excuse me. Self-will for me isn't always loud and dramatic. It doesn't show up that way in my life. Most of the time, it shows up in the shadow parts of my life. It leaks out in little reactions. It's sometimes something that I'm not even aware of until after the fact. And I used to think parts of these were like just my personality. It was just who I was, right? Things like sarcasm, defensiveness, superiority, people-pleasing, perfectionism, jealousy. I didn't know, excuse me, at the time that those are fear responses. For me, those are fear responses. And I didn't recognize right away that those were survival skills that I had decided to hold on to and internalize long before I ever picked up, right? Because my drug use is just a symptom of my addiction. I am my problem, right? Andy is the problem. In early recovery, I heard somebody talking about shadow principles. I had no idea what principles were, let alone shadow principles. But they're really, in simplicity, it's just the opposite of the spiritual principles and the path that we try and learn to walk in Narcotics Anonymous. Where humility should live, instead, my superiority wants to push in. And where honesty should live, my defensiveness rises up. Where faith should live, perfectionism tries to control my outcomes. Where love should guide me, jealousy whispers its lies. And where acceptance should be, my self-will wants to negotiate terms. I thought these reactions were just who I was. This was just who I was going to be forever, right? And the steps have shown me that they were who I became and who I become and who I am when fear runs me. Early in recovery, anger was my default setting. It took almost nothing to set me off. It wasn't always angry. I was like, I'm not the sort of anger that like punches holes into walls. I'm the sort of anger that there's little threads that run through everything, which is for me far more dangerous. It's hard to separate anger from anything else. They want to blend together. Something small would happen. You know, a situation wouldn't want to go the way I thought it should go, you know, the right way. Or somebody would say something that didn't align with the version that I had clearly built in my head. arguments that I had totally won in the shower didn't go the way that I had totally planned them to be. Instantly, my reactions were always like sarcasm, defensiveness, judgy superiority. And underneath the anger, underneath the sarcasm and the superiority, I was scared. Actually, in all honesty, I was terrified all the time. I am a fear-based creature left to my own devices. Anger was the bodyguard emotion. As I continue to work my steps, I find that there are emotions that are on top, and then there's the underlying emotion that is right next to the trauma that's underneath. My first couple of rounds of steps were about like my drug use, the damage I'd done when I was on my last run, things that lived on the surface, you know? And that's totally valid. That is why we work the steps repetitively forever. It's why I'll never graduate from this program. I'll never be fixed. But as I started to be able to show up for my step work, not with my ability, but like with willingness to the best of my ability, I started to come across things that emotions that guarded like the softer secret truth that was attached to trauma underneath. I'm not angry. I have fear of abandonment. I'm afraid of rejection, and I'm afraid of not being enough. Not just for other people, but for myself. It took me over a year to work my first rounds of steps because I was terrified of meeting myself. Not only was I worried about what you would think of me, I was worried what I would find, and then I wouldn't be enough, and then I would be stuck with me forever. A good friend of mine in early recovery, who was my best friend at the time, had like 20 years clean when I came in. Just a huge amount of time. And after a situation in public where I ran into somebody that I'd had some issues with, and we got in the car and she was like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. She's like, how was that? How was that seeing her again? I don't give a fuck. I don't even like her. It's fine. I'm like, ugh. Put on my seatbelt, all hyphy, we drive away. And she goes, are you sure, friend? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. I don't even like her. She's like, because seems like you might be a little angry. I was like, that's fine. And she goes, so you might want to think about the fact that like anger is the bodyguard of fear. I was like, what are you talking about? She goes, well, what were you afraid of right before you got mad? And with, you know, a hot year clean, I was like, nothing. I'm not scared of anything. I'm not scared of her. Yeah. Clearly that went well for me. But that question planted a seed that eventually like changed everything. Like I go back to that conversation in my mind in 2015 all the time. What was I afraid of right before I felt anger, right? And that's really like that first, that round of steps after that is when step four like finally like cracked open for me, right? I wasn't making a list of faults. I wasn't writing down what was wrong with me. I'm actually writing to uncover patterns fear kept me trapped in. And as I keep working steps, I learn more about bodyguard emotions that show up for me, right? My self-will shows up as sarcasm, which is guarding my insecurity, defensiveness, which guards my shame, superiority guards my inadequacy, people-pleasing guards my fear of rejection, perfectionism guards my fear of failure, and jealousy guards my fear of not being enough. all of these emotions are protecting my wounds, right? Even if I'm not aware of them. But they're so heavy. They're so heavy. It's like a backpack. I'm sure you guys have heard about the backpack full of rocks that you carry around when you come into recovery. And my rocks were fear, control, expectations, resentments, and old pain. God's will is what happens when I start unpacking the backpack. When I have faith in someone else and a program, when I can pick up a pen and write. The steps allow me guardrails and a guide and safety to walk through all of those emotions and unpack them in the correct order, one step at a time. I got a tool from one of my first sponsors called the 4P Pause, and it helps me build a bridge from self-will to God's will, if I choose to use it. All of my tools are only as valuable as how often I bust them out of my toolbox, right? So I pause, take a breath, and I allow room for grace from my higher power. I pray, I say, guide me, help me, show me how to show up right now. Not how I want to, but how I should. I make space for my higher power's mercy and love. And then I have to find the principle, right? Honesty, humility, patience, love, whatever fits for that situation. And then I proceed. I just take one next right action, and I just do the next right thing. Whether that means cleaning up a situation that my mouth just got me into, or something I've avoided doing, whatever the case may be, it's just the next right thing. I don't have to have it all figured out, right? I don't have to feel spiritual to choose a principle. I just need enough willingness to pause. I have come to find out in recovery that feelings don't lead the way and are followed by actions. It's the other way around. Actions lead me into feelings. I can change how I feel by what I choose to do or what I choose not to do. Think about the last time your chest tightened or the last time jealousy hit. And the last time you snapped or shut down in a situation, instead of reacting, what if we paused? Named that bodyguard emotion, and what if you asked fear what it was protecting, right? These are things that I can take to my pen and paper. These are things that I can take to my support group. These are things that I talk to my sponsor about. These are things that I allow myself to feel with acceptance. These are things that I give to my higher power on a regular daily basis. What if the next thing I did came from a principle rather than the fear that leads the way? That tiny shift for me, that's the bridge. That's God's will for me in real time, right? The steps have given me the grace to have that pause between thought and reaction. Sometimes it's not very big. Sometimes it's just and sometimes being, you know, not having a whole lot of time in recovery, sometimes that space is only available in the rearview mirror, but that's why we have the 10th step, right? I just moved from California. I came to Alabama August 1st. I turned my entire life upside down and moved across country because I stopped resisting what I thought it should be and started living in acceptance with what could be and what is, right? I've had many of those moments since I've moved, right, where my fears want to lead the way because this is a path I have never been on. This is me stepping into faith on a path that I have no idea what it looks like. I may look calm on the outside sometimes, but I'm just like everyone else. I'm spinning and obsessing and picking something apart and overthinking the shit out of it. My fear shows up as perfectionism a lot of times, right? Which keeps me stuck because it doesn't have to be done, it just has to be done perfectly. And one of the greatest gifts I found in recovery is the finishing is what's perfect. Seeing something through to the end is what's perfect for me. I obsess over outcomes, I try and fix everything. I isolate because I fear being rejected. I have not found, that's what my head tells me, my actual truth is when I move in God's will and principle and faith, that when I started opening up to my new area and my new group of people and women in recovery, I was loved, accepted, seen, identified, validated, and I could be as messy as I needed to be. I just needed to keep showing up. 10th step shows me the truth, right, every day, that I'm still scared of failing, I'm still scared of rejection, I'm still scared of disappointment. But as I practice the principles and I put the steps and what I've learned in recovery into action, I can fix those things in real time when they come up. I don't have to worry about, you know, choking on humble pie. No one ever died from making an amends. It just felt that way. 11 reminds me that God's will doesn't usually come as a feeling. It comes as guidance if I'm open to receiving it. It comes as stillness, as listening, as choosing principle over panic or false control. Step 12 reminds me that the antidote to self-centered fear for me is service. I cannot be in fear and come from love at the same time. Every time I choose a spiritual principle over fear, I walk into a life I never believed was possible. If you're new in these rooms and you've taken the step of faith to show up at your first convention, again, welcome. There is a simple recipe that everyone in this room knows about and we apply in our lives on a daily basis, right? I go to as many meetings as I can, more when I don't want to. You know, I'm meeting a day for 90 days. When I first got here, I want the easier, softer way, right? I was like, oh, 90 meetings? I could do 10 meetings a day and be done in no time. But a meeting a day for 90 days allows me to be seen, have people, you know, have a baseline to know who I am, to be able to see me when I'm on track and when I go way off into the weeds, right? I have a home group where if I don't show up, people notice that I'm not there, and amazingly, they come looking for me. They reach out. That's a gift. I'm in service in two separate areas because, you know, more is better. I have a sponsor. I kept my sponsor from California, and that requires some ingenuity and creativity to remain connected. And most importantly to me, I have a relationship with a higher power that is no longer myself. Thank God I'm not in charge. My life goes off the rails instantly. So I really appreciate, again, the committee asking me and inviting me to speak my experience, strength, and hope. I'm Andy. I'm still an addict. Thank you for letting me be of service.
Good job, Andy.
Ooh, that was good, guys. Mom, I'm going to call Mo to the podium now to introduce our next speaker.
I'm Mo. I'm an addict.
Hey, Mo.
Hey, our next speaker, I think I've known her longer than anybody in this room since the fifth grade. So our relationship definitely goes along with the topic, self-will versus God's will. Like probably a lot of people in here, I have issues with the opposite sex. I never thought that I could be physically attracted to a woman, but have a friendship with them and then not turn into a physical relationship through God, getting to know myself and an awesome human being and Ashley. I have learned that I can have relationships with women and practice God's will instead of my will, because my will wants it to be physical and fuck shit up. But yeah, I'm gonna start babbling with that. I give you Ashley P.
My name's Ashley, and I'm an addict. This thing's a little slanted. And I see what you were trying to do, because that's kind of... Ta-da! Yay. Oh, man. Okay, so... I also said fuck you to Matt with this topic. If you were in the last workshop and heard Amber say that. This is an ongoing, deep process, connection, relationship topic, no matter where I am in my recovery or in my life. It doesn't matter. Self-will and God's will is always up for the table, just like using and not using. There, it is always the end of the road, which, am I going to go right or am I going to go left? Self-will is inevitable for me at times. Much like Andy just said, there are some times when I don't know what I don't know until I know it. Right? I come from a place, going all the way back to childhood, where I had to learn how to survive. And I came in here with those same survival skills. And I am still learning, as life shows up, how to deconstruct those. Because those survival skills no longer work in a life of recovery. They no longer serve me. So sometimes self-will looks like I don't know that those survival skills are activated in self-will until I do the fucking work. Right? Because what I do know about self-will is it will always lead me to the same place that using did. And not just drugs. Netflix, relationships, sex, shopping, spending money just to fucking spend money. Like, I've got all the motherfucking addictions. It just took dope to get me here. I had to work on that first in order to get to the other layers. And what has come up for me over these last several years is relationships. And not just romantic relationships, right? Relationships with my family. Relationships with friends, sponsees, employers, coworkers, the human population as a whole. Relationships encompass everything that I do in some capacity every single day. And so, much differently than over the course of my recovery versus today, is I can go in. I go into self-will knowing I'm in fucking self-will. I know my motherfucking motives. I know what's on the other side. The low self-esteem, the low self-worth, and depending on what the self-will was, all the additional baggage from what everybody else carries that I have now allowed into my spirit or into my body. And so that is a blessing for me because I'm not going in blind. And that's what the power of recovery is about. And that's why we stay. Who in here has 30 days or less? Raise your hand. Hell yeah. Ma'am, not to embarrass you, but can you stand up for just a second? If you have 60 days or less, can you please stand up? No, please stay standing. If you have 90 days or less, please stand up. Anyone less than a year? Stay standing. Do not sit down. You are why I fucking stay here. You are why I continue to do the work, no matter how painful, no matter how debilitating. One promise and commitment that I made with God in that jail cell when I had no idea what my life was going to look like over 20 years ago is I said, I will go through this pain and I will do whatever it is that you need and want me to do as long as you use me to to help someone else find their way to you and to themselves. Thank you so much for standing up. Love you guys. So for me, I didn't just come to Narcotics Anonymous for one, even knowing what Narcotics Anonymous was. I did get introduced through H&I. I didn't really equate Narcotics Anonymous. I just knew I could relate and they were sharing my story. So when I got out of treatment, the most prevalent recovery program was the other one. And they really could not stand my rawness. They couldn't handle it. They're like, whoa, I think you need to go to them NA meetings. And I was like, NA? And so then I started going to Narcotics Anonymous. I was like, fuck yeah. These are my people, right? Like, this is raw, uncut. I don't know about y'all. I don't have time to sugarcoat shit.
Uh-huh, that's right.
Because that's what kills people. Okay? Now, there's a difference between honesty and brutal honesty. If you knew me early on, I was brutally honest with you. However, because of these steps and the principles and continuing to come back, I have learned how to be more compassionate with the truth. And the biggest thing is the only experience I have is mine. Regardless of like what my profession is, my opinion in here doesn't matter. And opinions kill people too. Hell yeah, whoever that was. So over the course of the last, I don't even know, since 2019, when I left my marriage, which I married him in self-will, thinking I knew some shit. Thinking that I knew that my children needed a man, role model, and figure in their life, because that's what the societal norm says. And if I'm a good mother, then I'm going to provide my children with a two-parent household, because both of their fathers were in addiction. My son's father is still with us. My daughter's father died 6 months after I left him to get clean from an overdose. And so I stayed in that marriage, trying to fix me in every way that I thought he needed, until one day I no longer recognized the woman in the mirror. And so I pulled the pin out the grenade and I threw that motherfucker. And I blew up my motherfucking life. And it also blew up a lot of what my life looked like in recovery in my area. Because we're humans and we think we know some shit about somebody else's life. We think sometimes we are behind those closed doors living in that fucking marriage. Or raising those fucking kids. And the only people that know that are the people in it and God. And so what was so strategic about that with the God of my understanding is no matter how painful it was, no matter how confusing it was used for divine intervention so I could learn that I am the most important person to myself, and I can't fully love myself or anyone else if I am constantly allowing you to dictate my worth and my identity. So it isolated me. And I have learned to be comfortable in the isolation with God and with myself. Because I'm no longer running around here like a little busy bee trying to pour into everyone, hiding my pain, seeking external validation to fill a spiritual void. much like using. And so after a series of back-to-back relationships from my marriage, because listen, y'all, God doesn't send you someone to leave your marriage when you're in a marriage. Like, that's not what God does. God does not send you someone when you refuse to leave a relationship that is toxic and unhealthy for you to get out of that toxic and unhealthy relationship. But every relationship I've been in has been from God. But God sent this person to me. Nah, bitch. You trying to control some shit and don't want to look at some shit and want to like get caught up in some shit. And the next thing you know, you want to leave, but now you've invested too much time and energy, so you don't leave. But now you're at that crossroad where you either leave or do something, you either use or do something different. And I threw the grenade. And so I am so happy to report that I no longer throw grenades. Because the work I do with myself and with God today, I don't even attract that fucking shit. Because we attract where we're broken. That doesn't mean that I don't still have broken places. But what it does mean is that when I get with God quietly, consistently, and I do that work, when I'm out in the world, even if people that are struggling or have brokenness, because we all do, I can be of service instead of trying to make it something it's not. Because Mo shared what he shared, right? Mo shared what he shared. I wasn't always in a place where I could do that. I would have got with you just because you wanted to get with me. Because I felt like it was my responsibility to make you feel good about you. That was my purpose in life, was to self-abandon me so you could live up to your potential and be loved and feel loved. Meanwhile, creating more trauma and disconnection for myself. And so today, I'm not about fix managing and controlling some shit. I don't care who you are. If God doesn't want you in my life, I'm not holding on today. Believe that. Doesn't mean it's not painful. Doesn't mean I won't call Amber and Jen and cry about it and talk about the confusion and lay in my bed with Uni, which is my unicorn, with my inner child who I love and nurture when shit's intense. It doesn't mean that there's not still work for me to do. Because loss is loss and grief is grief. And expectations are expectations. Because sometimes I want people to be in my life. And God says no. And today, I know it's God saying no. I don't question, oh, but I don't know if I really heard that, and I don't know that. I mean, that's not really right, right? Like, I can help this person. Like, we're supposed to help each other. I don't get confused about that shit today. And what I've learned when they said throughout my recovery, the longer you stay here, the road gets narrow. I understand that on a deeper level. Because in those narrow moments, driving down that road, I'm supposed to be in that passenger seat riding with God. And so in order to truly embody and connect with this topic on a deep level, I can't know self-will without knowing myself, and I can't know God's will without knowing God. And guess what? It takes what it takes. Because it took me until I was 38 years old. Fuck, how much time did I have then? No, fuck, it was 40. It was 40. Just kidding. It was 40. Going on 3 years, okay? In order to be single. So I have been single for the first time in my life since kindergarten for over 2.5 years. And that is only because of the grace and mercy of God. And because of the grace and mercy that my God gives me, I've learned how to give it to myself. And I've learned how to deconstruct those old belief systems and those survival skills. And I've learned how to reparent the younger versions of myself for healing. Y'all, that takes time. That shit don't happen in 1, 2, 3, even 5 years. And I thought I knew some shit at 5 years. When my sponsor said, I was in a meeting, and this person was celebrating 5 years and sharing their story, and I was like, what? My head's already popped out of my ass. Do you know what I've been through? Bitch, you know. No. Like, the longer I stay here, the less I know. The only thing that separates us, that's different about us, is that I just have one more day practicing something different than you. That's it. Because every day I am a newcomer. Every day. Because I've never lived that day clean. I've never gone through whatever situation is about to come at me clean. And so the second I think that I am above whatever experience, shit's about to go down. Now, I've been that. Don't get it twisted. I have been that. And it's only by the grace of God that I haven't left these rooms and used. That is the one thing that I've done perfectly. Is I kept coming back no matter what, and I didn't use. And that is the only way we can truly get to the message of our program, which is hope, and experience the promise, which is freedom from active addiction. So here's the difference between our promise. We can be free from a lot more than just active addiction. But that's on me. That's on me and what work I'm willing to do. If I'm not willing to do the work, then I'm not going to be free in that area. And the pain takes what the pain takes. When it gets great enough, I'll do something different. So when I turned 40, I said, I'm not going into this next decade doing what I've done up to this point. I'm going to love me and learn how to love me and everything about me radically, regardless of what behavior I'm participating in, regardless of how much time I have or who's in my life or who isn't in my life. And because of that, God is my everything. My best friend, my mom, my dad, my brother, my sister, my companion. I seek God for those connections. So I celebrated in December, and I left my literature at someone's house before I flew back to Florida. And I was like, oh, I'll get it back when I come back to Nashville. And so at my celebration, I had to use Jen's Living Clean in order to do what God needed me to do. Well, I always pray and close my eyes, and I ask for God to just land on whatever God needs me to be the vessel for. And it was relationships. And I said, oh, no, we ain't doing that tonight. Nope. Self-will. Knowingly. So then I flew to San Antonio to see my best friend Jen and speak at ECNA. Had to use her book because I still hadn't gotten my literature back from a friend. Same process. Lands on relationships. Nope. However, when I'm up here, I am not going to not share the truth. I don't give a fuck if I'm ready to share it or not. And if God needs me to share it, then I'm going to share it. So you might see like a struggle up here because I'm talking to God and I want to be rebellious, but I also know the power in being a vessel and someone being in that audience who may be on the verge of walking out these doors and never coming back. And we know where that ends. And more times than not today with what's out there, they don't make it back. And so I'm not willing to protect my face today. I never really have been. So I shared some shit there. So when we talk about self-will, I'm in this process for 2.5 years, single and celibate, going great. However, the disease starts to creep in a little bit, and it's like, have you really done as much work on your love addiction as you think you have? You may need to test it out and see. And I'm like, the fuck? So I start praying, right? If it's meant for me to start dating or, whatever, la la la, then show me. The first week of December, right after I got back from Florida, my daughter, who was 22, was experiencing the death of her father for the first time in her life, which obviously activated my grief, my emotion. And we went to dinner because we were gonna eat and then go pack all her shit so she can move in with me at my dad's. And these two men walk in. And I know these men because we used to buy dope from them. And I also know them because this area is really small and there's big families and we all grew up together and we were all connected in some way or another. And so this one particular guy I had sex with at 9 months clean. And here he is, sitting right there, not far, whom I slept with right after the death of her father to numb. And so then we reconnect and I'm like, I gotta test this out, right? And so I did. I made a conscious decision in the moment and I fucked him. And so, no, hold up. No one warned me about how painful sex is after you haven't had it for 2.5 years. So the first time was not great. So of course I went back, right? Duh. Like, why do that if you don't get something out of it other than pain? And so did that. Spirit is not, but now I know, right? Like, now I know the disease process in my mind, in my emotions, in my body, and in my past experiences. And I know that this ain't that, right? And I know that he does not have the ability to sit at the same table as me and bring what I bring. And that I'm not doing. I don't give a fuck who you are. But I went back a couple more times. So that last time, I was like, okay, I'm going to go. I'm going to take my power back. And we're going to be good. And I did. And then I was able to shut it down and no longer participate. And so I got the evidence that I was looking for in self-will, right? That I have done a lot of work on my love addiction. And that I'm no longer willing to participate and settle for anything less than what I deserve. And let me tell you something. When you get with God on them isolated back roads and you truly learn the power of God and how much God loves you, and you really spend time with that and connect with that and embody that, you don't settle for anything less than that. And so I know for me, it doesn't matter how long I'm here, how much work I do, the sixth step is still very real. I still have defects, and I'm not confused about that. What I am willing to do today is go to meetings, share honestly, call my sponsor, share honestly, allow people in my life who God brings, allow people to tell me the truth, and help me learn something different. Because, like, I know that I will never reach a status that will ever make me better than anyone. And I don't carry those insecurities anymore that have me seeking that. Everyone in this room has a purpose, or you wouldn't fucking be here. Here's the catch. We all have the purpose, but it's up to us to do something with it. And that's the heavy part. What I know is that no matter what I've been through, no matter what I will continue to go through, that does not define who I am. And when I learn how to operate from a belief and value system that directly correlates with these spiritual principles and the God of my understanding, I don't live in confusion. So I love the Living Clean. And so since third time is the charm, and I self-willed it the first two times, I'm going to read you something in here out of the Living Clean. Yay. So this is on page 159, second paragraph. It can be hard to admit, but the times when we most desire to be in a relationship are often the moments when we are least equipped to handle one. So many of us struggle with the fear that we will never have a partner, and that not having a life partner means we will always be alone. This kind of fear leads to panic and to pain. When we are lonely, sad, or trying to distract ourselves, we may be willing to settle for things that are not actually what we want in the long term. When our priority is simply not being alone, we are likely to compromise our values or our priorities to commit too quickly to a person we are just getting to know. There's an old saying, be careful what you pray for. You might get it. I got everything I prayed for one day, and I walked away from every fucking bit of it. And it's only through this program I am allowed to lose myself and find myself over and over and over again. I am so honored and deeply grateful to be a recovering woman in the program of Narcotics Anonymous. I know, without a shadow of a doubt, that if it wasn't for this program, if it wasn't for these rooms, and if it wasn't for all of you in them, I would not be alive, nor would I be the amazing, beautiful, phenomenal woman that I am in all aspects of my life with my fucking imperfections. That's all I got. Thanks.
You guys ready to circle up?
Yep.